You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Cott and I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Craig Swan and the one and only Chris Sutton. Guys, how are you?
Yep,
good.
I'm very well, thank you. Good summer. Did you guys have a good break?
Lovely break, Chris. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
all very good. Bit of golf in, bit of holiday in. Lovely.
Yeah, it's been lovely. How about yourself, Chris?
Yeah, went to Disney World and met all the big characters there. So great time and now back to the madness.
And prepared for a season in Scottish football. We're going to Disneyland.
The jokes write themselves.
It's been
a busy summer in Scottish football. Lots of ins and outs at Celtic. Chris Wood, it's 7 signings if you include the guys that were here on loan last season, turned permanent. What do you make of Celtic's business so far?
I wonder whether there's going to be one or two more in, but as a whole, I think you go back 12, 13 months, whatever it is, when Ange Postecoglou took charge, it's a lot easier this summer than last summer. It's a team and a squad who superseded expectations. I thought Ange Postecoglou's recruitment really has been first class since he's been in, and now it's trying to make the team better. I think they needed strengthening because, Christopher Julian's had his day. He's just not for Ange Postecoglou, and, bringing Maurice Jentz in is, that's, I'm not saying it's plugged a bit of a gap, but there needs to be competition for places there. Stephen Welsh, who I didn't think he had his best game against Norwich City at the weekend, is another option. And that midfield area, Callum McGregor is such an integral part of the way that that Celtic play the football, gets on the half turn, his speed of passing. But if Callum gets injured, then somebody needs to step into his shoes. And I think Aaron Moy possibly could be that player. Got a really good reputation down south for his performances at Huddersfield and Brighton. Has been away for a couple of seasons. I've got to say, I'm no expert on Chinese football, but he's at Shanghai Port, and Celtic would have scouted him as a player who Ange Postecoglou knows very well. Looked a bit rusty at the weekend, that has to be said, but if he fires and Celtic would have watched him closely, then I think that's a position where Celtic needed another body in. It doesn't look like James McCarthy's going to play much of a part in the big games for Celtic. He's possibly had his day. Aaron Moy has come in and another body in an area where Celtic needed strengthening.
I think that's the key, Chris, definitely. The strengthening has been done in the areas where just about everybody thought that it needed to be done. I think everybody realised that the competition was needed for Greg Taylor. Bernabei sourced and signed. The central defensive issue you touched on, Jens sourced and signed, Rogic and Beaton leaving, Moy's been brought in, obviously Matt O'Reilly and Hatate were done in January, so that was kind of sort of preempting that happening. So the key is he's kind of filled the areas that needed to be filled, which is good, because the team last year that finished the season was flying anyway. It was just a case of supplementing it rather than having to make big changes, you suggested. And I think we all realise, Daniel may get to this later on, but already we're having discussions about, will it be him or will it be Kyogo? Will it be Giakoumakis? Who will play wide? Will it be Abada? Will it be Forrest? Will it be Jota? Will it be Maeda? Will it be none of them? You very, very rarely get 24 players fit of a weekend. Wow. It never happens. And if ever there was an example of that, it was Celtic last season.
Guys, I think, yeah. I think the left back, you know, situation at Celtic and Greg Taylor, who, you know, did a decent job last season. Celtic definitely needed strengthening in that area.
Yeah.
Burnaby is interesting. Look, I think that, you know, from his point of view, he's a young player. He's coming. He's going to have to get used to Ange Postecoglou's style with the inverted fullbacks. And I think he's, not saying he's struggled, but he needs to catch on quickly with the way that that Celtic play. And, you know, Legia Warsaw, he was a little bit rusty, and again at the weekend. And, you know, it's I've got to say it's difficult. You know, players who play on the outside, as Bernabeu would have been used to playing back in Argentina, to then play as an inverted fullback in that middle area. It's a different sort of awareness. Which he needs, but he needs to catch on quickly. And looks like there'll be good competition in that area.
Chris, would you say the good thing as well is, though, that the signings this year, unlike last year, actually will have a bit of time to settle in? Last year, they literally had to hit the ground running. I mean, they were basically learning on the job, whereas, you know, there's an expectation that Bernabeu has been signed for a large amount of money. He should go straight into the team. A lot of people think that, but that's not necessarily the case. I mean, Celtic don't start in the Champions League to mid-September. Greg Taylor's more than capable of holding his own in the position, and that will give Bernabeu a bit of time to build up. I don't think this year is a necessity necessarily for the new players to come in immediately. And I think that'll be a big benefit to them. May take a little bit of pressure. You know, if you look at Morris Jens, for example, and compare it with the situation Carl Starfelt was in last year. Starfelt was basically thrown in and had to deal with it. Whereas Jens can take a bit of time if it's needed. I know Starfelt's out just now. That's maybe a bad example. But, you know, he'll have a bit of time. Starfelt will be back soon. Jens will have a bit of time to settle in here, and he won't be relied upon immediately in the same way as Starfelt was relied upon immediately. And I think that should help some of the new guys.
I think that. But I think that they, you know, on the flip side of that, they, you know, certainly need to be ready. Celtic need a fast start to this season. So, you know, if they do get the opportunity. The centre-half situation, I think, is really interesting because Starfelt is out. I think that, you know, there's talk of him maybe returning to training at the end of this week or next week. That's been the talk. But if you're Moritz Jens, you're thinking, well, do you know what? You know, I've come into the club on loan. He had, what, 16, 17 games at Lorient last season. You know, there's an opportunity there. If Starfelt was fit, of course, he'd start the season alongside Carter Vickers. And, you know, he'll want to get games under his belt pretty quickly. Yeah. Ange Postecoglou likes Stephen Welsh. He's worked with him for a while now. And, you know, Stephen Welsh has proved to be, you know, a pretty OK deputy when he has been given the opportunity. I know there's talk about him moving to where was he? Where was the talk?
Toulouse, I think.
I don't think he'll be allowed. He won't be allowed to leave.
Well, why?
Can't see it.
Why? Well, why would Celtic let him go? First and foremost, you know, they need bodies in that position. So then, you let Stephen Welsh go. I mean, they'll have to bring another body in that position. Ange Postecoglou's worked for him with him for a long time now. So that, you know, why would Celtic, you know, want to go into the start of the season leaving themselves short?
You would like to think, Chris, as well, if the manager had sanctioned a move, which he obviously did, for Christopher Julien to go to Germany, even though it didn't go through. The fact he sanctioned it would suggest that he's been going somewhere before August is finished, I would have thought. But that's even more a reason why you would need to keep Welsh.
I mean, Christopher Julien, for whatever reason. Now, I've got to say, you know, I think Christopher Julien in a Celtic jersey has had some, you know, some really big moments. And he's been a good player for whatever reason. And Ange Postecoglou has seen him in training. He's not for him. We know that the way Celtic play, that, you know, the in many respects, the centre-halves have to be the best player because, you know, Ange Postecoglou's style of play likes to overload in the midfield and forward areas, and that leaves the centre-halves, having to defend on their own at times. And, you know, maybe Ange Postecoglou feels that Christopher Julien isn't capable enough to do that, but he looks like, you know, the decision has been made on him, but he can't leave himself short in that position. A lot of games, you know, early part of the season, the Premier Sports Cup, then the Champions League, and last season, Carter Vickers and Starfelt, you know, more from Starfelt, the longer the season went on, were so, so dependable. But, you know, if they get injured, then they need able deputies. And that means that Welsh and Jens will have to step up.
See,
also just fascinating to see Joe Hart slot into a back three on Saturday.
Yeah, that was. I mean, how? I've never seen him quite so high. But there was that moment, wasn't there, when I think Carter Vickers was under pressure from Pookie. Just in the Celtic half. And you think, if Carter Vickers makes a mess of that, then,
yeah,
I mean, blimey, the easiest goal Pookie would have ever scored.
Just on Julian, to finish up on him, guys, I feel a bit bad for Julian, because, like you say, Chris, I get that it just looks like a case of he's not for Ange, but he's never. I don't think he started a competitive game under Ange. It's still taken, like you say, you know, games against Lazio, the winner against Rangers in the cup final. Julian's a big player under Neil Lennon.
You have to remember one thing, Daniel. You have to remember one thing about this. Ange Postecoglou sees them every day, and he judges them every day.
Yeah.
He made an interesting point after the game on Saturday. Someone asked him about the build-up and the games and such, and he kind of made reference to the fact that it's not just the matches; it's every day. It's what I see every day,
mm-hmm.
that we're building every day, not just the games you see us in public. We're building every day, and he puts great store in that. Now, I don't see the training sessions every day. None of us do. He does. There's obviously a reason why he hadn't had chances.
And also, as you guys know, I'm no body language expert. But you look at Christopher Julian's body language, the way he's sort of moping around with his hood up before games, and then he's a goner, isn't he? And the Schalke thing fell through, and I think there was talk about him going to Trabzonspor. I think as a whole, you know, in a Celtic jersey, he's been okay. But I mean, I don't think any of us really are in a position where we, are going to criticise Ange Postecoglou for his decision on a player and his view on players, because his record in the transfer market has been pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, the test now really is, and it's more difficult this summer because he's had so much success in the transfer market that he needs to go again and improve the team. I mean, Tom Rogic, I still think he's a huge loss to Celtic, and O'Reilly's really got to step up. And O'Reilly showed great promise last season when he came in and hit the ground running. I've got to say, I thought Hatate at the weekend against Norwich City was breathtaking, really breathtaking, and that's hugely encouraging. And you look sort of further forward, the competition for places in those forward areas. I like he always finds a way of getting Maeder into the team, and I understand that. But, you know, I suppose there is an argument to say, I don't know what you guys think, but Jota off the right, I know he played there a few times last season. Is he as effective? I don't think so. And that may end up being a bit of a conundrum for...
Jota off the left and Leila Bada off the right. I mean, Leila Bada's figures last year were incredible for a 19-year-old. Mm. I know he turned 20.
But he plays Maeder, doesn't he?
He does. He likes to play me. Then you can understand why, because it was something one of the other coaches said to me after one of the games. So I'm just blithering away. And after one of the games, and he said he sets the tempo for the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm.
He gets them. You know, that type of thing that Callum McGregor does. But he starts it. No one gets a minute's peace.
Yeah.
When he's playing, it was fascinating. I think we talked about it in the podcast at the time, Chris, in the. I think it you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure in the semi-final against Rangers that Celtic lost, Maeder played through the middle, mm-hmm. and was just hassling people constantly. People couldn't get time on the ball. Connor Goldson couldn't get time on the ball. Kyogo came on, Maeder shifted it to the left, and within 5 minutes, Connor Goldson was able to stroll it from the back and ping a pass 50 yards to Tavernier for Rangers to equalise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of unseen things that Maeder brings. And I think Postecoglou likes that. You can totally understand it.
Yeah. And one of Norwich's sort of, say, prominent players last season, but Max Aarons, had an indifferent season. But at the weekend, I mean, Maeder matched him on that. You know, he was Norwich's threat off that right-hand side. Maeder matched him really well. The conundrum, as I said, is keeping all the players happy. And that's not going to be easy. But go back 12, 13 months and you think, blimey, you know, this was a side on its knees. There wasn't competition for places. Yeah. There was a lot of complacency at the club. And now, you know, it's a good position in many ways. Postecoglou's in,
but
there are five subs this season, aren't there?
Yeah,
five subs this season. And you know, I suspect, and you know, I don't know this, but I suspect that that in the early part of the season, especially, that Ange Postecoglou might be, you know, big on the changes, and you know, until I mean, I don't know whether he knows his first 11, because of the competition inserted in there. As I say, his first 11, his best 11, in his mind, because, you know, I think we could have a, you know, a good debate and a good argument about who the strongest front three is at the club, because they all have very, very different attributes. You know, whether it's Jack or Mac, as you mentioned, Abada's numbers, you know, were incredible last season, and you know, he's always very direct when he comes on. And you've got the Jota debate: is he better off the left? Is he better off the right? Well, clearly he's better off the left. But how can you leave Maeda out of the team? And in fairness, at the weekend, huge fan of Kyogo, but when Giakoumakis came on, Celtic seemed to have more clout. Now Norwich may have been tiring then, but how can you leave Kyogo out of the team? I just wonder whether this season Kyogo may be used at times in as one of those two at the top of the midfield to allow Giakoumakis to start as a number nine, something which, you know, a position where Kyogo played in Japan.
Interesting. I mean, we've talked, guys, a lot about the incomings, but still plenty of time left in the transfer window. Where else in the squad needs to still be strengthened? I mean, there's been lots of links with various holding midfield players. I mean, is that an area that you think still needs to kind of be bolstered?
Was that not what Aaron Moy was brought in to do? I know he can play as a six or an eight, but I suspect, you know, Aaron Moy's 31 years old now. You know, him coming in, a player who Ange Postecoglou knows very well. I suspect that's what he was brought in for. You know, the issue is you have to get better in than what you've got. And as I say, I don't think anybody could replace Tom Rogic for what he actually brought to the table at Celtic. And I think Matt O'Reilly, you know, he still needs to step up another level. But I thought his performances, the confidence which he showed last season, and this is a guy who wants to go to the World Cup with Denmark. So it's, you know, it's a big few months for him. I thought he was quiet at the weekend, but he's a really talented footballer. But and it looks like at the start of the season, I don't know what you guys think, but the first game coming up, it looks like it'll be the same starting. I think it'll be the same starting 11 which started against Norwich City. Obviously Welsh, because Starfelt isn't fit. Bernabeu is probably not quite adjusted enough at this particular time. But it looks like in midfield, O'Reilly is going to be O'Reilly and Hatate at the, you know, at the top of the midfield, and the likes of Turnbull have got work to do to oust those two.
And I think that's a good point you make, Chris, as well, in terms of how do you improve it. You may now be reaching a stage where I think everybody looks at the Celtic squad, looks at the Champions League games and thinks, well, maybe a little bit more solidity in the midfield to protect the defenders would be best. But you're now moving into the realms where you're literally signing guys for six games. Mm. You know, signing, you know, if you look at the Celtic squad just now, is that squad strong enough and good enough to win the Premier League? You would say yes, because, well, the guts of it won the Premier League already and it's been added to. I take the point that a top class holding midfield player for the big Champions League games would be excellent. I think everyone would agree on that. But what do they cost? Mm-hmm. Where do you start on the numbers for getting a Champions League standard player like that? And then if he's just a breaker of play, listen, that's probably a bad example. Ange Postecoglou wouldn't just sign a breaker of play, but someone who could play as well. So that takes the number up. But again, in the Premier League, you're not going to play with two holding players.
No, I think that's totally right. So you're right in terms of transfer.
You're kind of signing a guy maybe for six games, and then maybe come. Ange Postecoglou has said the club will remain active and alert or agile. One of those two or three words it starts with. He said that anyway, and they will until it gets to the end of August. If something comes up and it's available, I'm sure they'll look at it. My hunch would be, we know how it works with the English market, the European market. You get to the last week and people start moving around. There's a bit of a merry-go-round. Clubs start to know who's surplus to requirements. If one or two gems become available, then to get on loan maybe. Yeah. Then, you know, if there's one they could get on a loan, that might be ideal. But I think you're talking about spending an awful lot of money. And let's not forget, people tend to, unfairly on Celtic, they don't really count the transfer fees that have been paid for Carter Vickers and Jota because they were already there as new signings. Celtic have spent a fortune this summer. And to go and then spend another load on a top-class holding midfield player, I would suggest is a big ask, I think. Trying to maybe shop around, find, maybe get a gem or something on loan if it comes up. But I don't think it's a necessity. I don't think they need to be going and trying to buy some for the Champions League. I think that's I think that's running before you walk. Get in and try and bed yourself in and see how you go in the Champions League this season and concentrate on winning the league and then maybe take the next step the next year. But one step at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. And just while we're on talking about pre-season, Chris, social media informed me that it's 19 years ago to the day that you were on tour with Celtic in America and you scored the winner against Boca Juniors in one of these pre-season cups.
Brilliant goal. thanks for bringing that up. Finish. What's his name? Carlos Tevez was playing for Boca Juniors.
Oh, no, okay.
No one remembers that. Sorry, they just remember you were playing for Celtic.
I think I don't know whether Henrik was playing up front, but I remember Carlos running over to me at the end of the game and saying, "I want your jersey, Chris." didn't go for Henrik. That's a lie. But I got Tevez's shirt.
Were you one for collecting shirts, Chris? Have you got a big collection in the house? Or?
It's none of your business, Danny. I've got one or two, yeah.
Did you?
Mainly sponsored by Topshop.
Did you generally enjoy the pre-season tours? Like, I imagine Martin O'Neill's pre-season training would have been pretty strenuous.
Yeah, no, I used to like pre-season. I used to, get fit on the family holiday. There's only so much time I could spend with my wife and kids. So I used to make sure I was fit and ready to go. And you know, I was a bit older when I went to Celtic. So, need to condition yourself properly. And the older I got in my career, the more important I felt that it was. I used to love the pre-season games. We used to go down to England and thump Fulham and QPR sort of regularly, then fly out to America. And I used to really enjoy the tours, visiting different American cities. I think, you mentioned the game against Boca Juniors. I think that was in Cleveland. We used to play in the big stadium. Seattle, we played in the Seahawks stadium, I think against Manchester United, maybe Chelsea as well. Philadelphia, really, really good trips. And look, I mean, depends which way you want to look at results. Are results important in pre-season? I've never really cared about results. I think it's about building a bit of continuity and a rhythm within the team and getting your fitness levels up. Results don't do you any harm when you take a big scalp. I think we went down to Manchester United and beat them 4-3 in their own patch, which was quite a lively game that was. And then I think a week later we went and beat Ajax in the Champions League qualifier. Maybe that result gave us a bit of confidence, but we'd won the treble the previous season and we knew we were a capable team. But it's all about being ready. And I think if you're Arsene Postecoglou, beat Norwich City deservedly so well at the weekend, but the focus is all on Aberdeen getting off to a good start and carrying on the momentum from last season, because we can't forget Celtic's start last season, and that's not on the manager. That just showed the difficulty and the pressure he was under coming in, and nightmare squad, having to change things, bring players in. Swanee mentioned Carl Starfelt. Remember Kyogo coming on Hearts, in the first game, just off a flight, thrown into the game, and then that incredible run the team went on. But I feel sorry for the manager and the players and the coaching staff, because it's always been the same, hasn't it? But against the odds, he comes in, makes a massive impact, ticks a lot of boxes, winning the league. Rangers winning at 25 points the previous season, brand of football, ticking that box, almost immediately, certainly getting there at the end of the season. Celtic are, you know, really, really good team to watch, and yet they don't only get a couple of weeks to celebrate, and then, you know, you're back in, and it counts for nothing. Celtic lose against Aberdeen on the first day of the season. The pressure's on again, and that's, you know, that's the madness of football north of the border, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's funny, as we go into the first game of the season at the weekend, this might seem like a bit of an obvious question, but what are Celtic's aims ahead of the new campaign? I mean, obviously, is it fair enough to say they're definitely the favourites to win the Premiership?
I don't think they're definitely favourites. You would probably give them...
Well, you think Rangers are favourites?
No, I finished this. I think I would slightly edge Celtic as favourites. I think they are favourites because they've won it, but they're not definite favourites. I think Rangers were strong last season. Celtic were strong. Two strong teams, as Chris alluded to many times.
So even
Rangers have made a lot of good moves in the market. By the look of it, the same as Celtic have. They're both going to be strong again. I think Celtic are marginal favourite.
What's marginal? You're good with your betting, Swanee. What's marginal?
If I was laying it, I would lay 4-5 Celtic, evens, Rangers. That's how I would lay it. It's always tight at the top because, let's face it, you can get any price you want, but the other 10.
What price would you have given Celtic last season?
Last season, Celtic would have been 3-1, 7-2 chances, I would have thought. And it would have taken a brave man to have a few quid on, I think. Judging by the state of the place last year, let's be honest, I think you were one of the very few people who gave him a chance, Chris. To give you credit, you didn't say that they would win it, but you said it could happen. It can change.
Are you saying I was non-committal?
You were, yeah. You said people shouldn't expect it, but it could happen, and you were right.
Yeah, that's a cop-out, isn't it?
And well, no, really. I'm trying to get you some credit here, and you don't appear to want it. For some reason, you're usually happy to take it. I don't know. Celtic are slight favourites for me, but I don't think anybody can say they're definitive cast iron certainties to win the league again. I don't think that's... And if you're asking me what the aim is, Daniel, to me, that's number one at the start of every season. I don't know how Chris and that felt when those boys were going into Champions League match and that. The league is everything. You've got to win the league. That's what it's all about. Of course, Europe is a huge thing for Celtic, and to try and make some sort of ripple in the Champions League would be fantastic. And when I say making a ripple, I mean just getting in there, being competitive, great nights at Celtic Park, maybe get a win, a couple of wins, that'd be fantastic. But, you know, people have to be realistic that I think the pot four, whatever they get, is going to be very, very difficult in terms of opposition. It's going to be a new experience for a lot of the players. Ange Postecoglou wants to do well. Of course he does. He wants to do well in every competition for his club and for himself, because you want to show up well in this competition. He's the first Australian to manage in the Champions League group stages. He'll want to do well. But people shouldn't expect too much in terms of that. Players should just go and try and enjoy it if they can. Get the experience from it. It's just build on, as Postecoglou says. Get better all the time. Always improving, getting better. Win the league again, get your experience in the Champions League, and then go again next year. And we're already looking forward to next season's preview. But I think the main aim is the league. Always has to be the league. I don't know what Chris thinks, but when you start out every season, that has to be the league. Being the champions has to be the number one priority, I'd say.
Yeah, it never stops.
Mm-hmm.
It never stops.
I definitely think that, as you said, the Champions League is...
Do you mean me, Chris?
It never stops.
The Champions League is obviously is what it is, as you say, pot four, Swanee. It's going to be really, really tough, whoever Celtic get. But I definitely feel, Chris, that Celtic, a club of Celtic size, it's been too long since they've kind of, I don't know how the right way to put this, but achieved in Europe since they did make a dent on either the Champions League or even the Europa League. I mean, I think I'm right in saying there's that stat that goes about that we go all the way back to when your team put out Barcelona, Chris. That's the last time Celtic won a two-legged European knockout tie. And as well, I think it's 5 or 6 years since they were in the group stages. I definitely feel that Celtic need to make an impact this season in Europe.
What's making an impact then?
Well, I think it's hard to say when they don't, you know, we haven't had the draw, obviously, you know, but I think if they can come out the group stage still in Europe and then look towards a couple of knockout ties after Christmas, that's got to be, for me, par for the course this season.
Yeah,
Sorry, Chris, but you say that's par. I would say that's probably a birdie.
Think so?
Yeah, if you're a top four team and you manage to get into third. I mean, listen, we don't know the draw, but again, I mean, listen, Rangers showed what was possible last year in the Europa League, The Champions League is different entirely in terms of levels and standard and quality. If Celtic could get third in the group, it would be terrific. I don't think it would just be seen as par golf. I think that would be a pretty good effort to get into the Europa League. And then you're fair enough, Daniel. If they got into the knockout of the Europa League, then yeah, they have to do better than what they did in two ties against Bodo Glimt when they lost 5 goals in the Conference League. Particularly acceptable, even though I think most of us would agree after the first leg that tie had gone and the team selection and Bodo that's for the second leg would suggest the eyes had turned to the league, although Ange Postecoglou would say definitely.
I think performances are right. I don't want to sort of be misquoted on this, but I think that that what Ange Postecoglou will be looking for is to give one or two teams a bloody nose this season. And you know, he talks about is process and performance. And you know, watching Celtic at the weekend dominate the ball, you know, maybe the final third, there's a criticism that you know, didn't create enough. But, you know, the speed of passing and the way they dominated the ball, I think that Ange Postecoglou will want to do that, you know, in the Champions League. And I think that, you know, you mentioned last season, and I don't think necessarily it's fair to judge Celtic as a team in Europe last season, because the onus was you know, all about the league. It's disappointing in Europe. You can't get away from that fact. But because of what happened the previous season with the riches of the Champions League this season, you know, it was all about the league. And this season, people will be, scrutinising Celtic and, you know, can they compete? We saw what happened with Brendan Rodgers and with his philosophy and with his positivity going into Europe and getting absolutely smashed. And walloped. I suspect that that there'll be games in Europe, and you know, whoever Celtic get, where Celtic will play with a bit more balance and maybe not so gung ho, you know, as they are in domestic competitions. And Postecoglou isn't daft, and he'll realise the level of teams. But I think he will have the same sort of principles in many respects in terms of dominating the ball, being brave on the ball and giving one or two a bloody nose. And I do think Celtic are capable of that. Where I think it's not a concern necessarily for pre-season, because how much you want to read into pre-season. I still worry about Celtic defensively and the brand of football and the you know, maybe the centre halves being exposed, because the space is, you know, when you go up a level and Celtic, you know, are going up a level in Champions League football, the spaces, you know, you find are too big against the best teams and you can be exploited, and that would be the worry. But I'm sure Ange Postecoglou, you know, has a plan for that. But in general, his principle of dominating the ball and giving, you know, some big teams a bloody nose is, you know, is I think what Celtic will be looking to do. And the first two games in the Champions League are absolutely crucial, because if Celtic can get something out of the, you know, whoever they play, one of the first couple of games, there'll be a bit of hope. I can't remember what happened last time in the Champions League, but I think it was thoroughly depressing, wasn't it? I think they'd lost the first three games. Was it
Anderlecht?
Yeah, and then Bayern Munich and Anderlecht. And then you're thinking, blimey, you know, this is a, you know, it's not going to happen. It was thoroughly depressing, wasn't it?
I'm trying to think. Did they not win the second game?
They won in Anderlecht, didn't they? But
I think that was later on, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because Anderlecht came and won at Celtic Park, and I think the final group game.
But Celtic got through because they had a better head-to-head. But I think they lost the first game at home at Paris Saint-Germain quite heavily, if I can remember correctly, and then went to Brussels and
Right, okay.
Destroyed Anderlecht. So, yeah, and that's right, Chris. That did raise a bit of hope in that section. It did, because I remember the Bayern Munich game, right? The Bayern Munich game at Celtic Park. Celtic not equalising.
Yeah.
Late in the day, and it was one each, and they were banging the game and then lost a late goal. So, yeah, it does give some hope. By the way, Chris, you never answered the question about the favourites for the title.
What was the question again?
Are Celtic clear favourites for the title this year?
Well, how do you define clear?
Well, I don't know. You got me to price it up a minute ago.
That wasn't clear, was it?
How do you think the title race is fixed this year then, Chris?
I think that...
After last season,
Celtic being 7-2, as you said, this season...
That's why I'm not a bookie. That's why I drive around a Ford Fiesta, not a Jag.
I think you'd... I like Van Bronckhorst and what he's done at Rangers. Getting to a major European final was a big deal. But I think most Celtic fans would look at it like this, that the team improved no end last season under Ange Postecoglou. And I think Ange Postecoglou, is quoted in, saying that there's so much more which he wants to come and believes will come. So, he made a huge impact on the training ground last season, and I think Celtic will, really double down this season, and I think it'll be close, but I think Celtic will win it.
So you agree with me then? Celtic will edge it.
Just edge it, yeah. 4-5.
Celtic, they won the league last season. They won
you've got a limit, £20.
They won it by 4 points last season, and I'm going to go out on a limb. I think they won it by more points this season.
Mm. It's not really going out on a limb, is it?
Just because.
If they win it by 5 points, is that you going out on a limb?
Just give them
you'd be dragging this podcast out next year.
Daniel, if you say 25 points, then that's brave.
You could push me going out on a limb. Six or seven points. Think it'll be comfortable this season for Celtic.
Six or seven.
Before we finish, guys, I like putting you both on the spot. So, predictions for the weekend, Swanee, what do you think?
I think it's a terrific game for Celtic to start with. We obviously had a lot of questions to answer, or will have a lot of questions to answer this season after it's a difficult time for him when he went in, but everyone said he shouldn't be judged on any of that. He was trying to get things sorted out, move players on, have a look at the guys that were there. You couldn't judge him. He got his own team in place. They've certainly started well. I know the Premier Sports Cup, if you listen to Hibernian and St Mirren managers, is not worth anything at this stage of the season. But Aberdeen have certainly posted their intentions with their performances in it. So they're coming in good form. You would expect Celtic to put a marker down early doors.
Score prediction.
I think Celtic will probably win 3-0 or 3-1.
I knew you were going to say that.
Why? Why did you know I was going to say that? Because I was giving Aberdeen a big build-up.
No, I knew you were going to say 3. In fairness, I knew you were going to say that. I thought you were going to go really safe and say 2-0.
I went out on a limb. Yeah. I went to 3 instead of 2.
Yeah.
I take the Daniel Coe approach. gone gung-ho, Ange style.
Chris, what's your prediction?
3-0 or 3-1. I think that I think it's so crucial. The first game, lay down a marker. I think the first, bottom line is with Celtic, if Aberdeen hang on in there for the first half an hour, then they'll probably think they have a chance. But Celtic come out of the traps. So, that's what they do. If they get a couple of early goals, it could be anything. But I think Aberdeen will be better organised this year under Jim Goodwin. But I still think Celtic will edge it because of the bench. Five subs. It is five subs this season, isn't it? And the fact that the Celtic have the firepower on the bench and people, the players who don't start the game, the likes of Jack and Mackes.
Who would you start up front, Chris?
Do you know what? Well, I think he'll start with the same 11 as he started against Norwich City. I do.
But what would you start with?
What would... what I'd start with. I prefer Jota off the left-hand side, but then, you know, I don't think Maeda is as effective through the middle. So, I'm happy to go with the same forward line as last week. And then, but, you know, the beauty of Celtic this season is the bench and the bench being strong. I think it's really one to watch this season, the way that Ange Postecoglou, you know, rotates the players and how he gives them a run of games. And, as a former player, as the only former player on this pod, you know, you want to have a run of games and get a rhythm and consistency. So it's not easy for the manager to keep everybody happy. So that balance of how he does it, I think, is going to be, you know, really fascinating this season.
How many appearances did you make for Celtic, Chris?
I don't know. It's such a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
So he's obviously never seen us play, Swanee, seeing he's the only player on this board.
No, probably has.
Haven't had the pleasure.
We've got no England caps between us, so that's not bad.
But I've never really watched pub football.
Oh.
you did get some of us out the pub to play.
Guys, we could sit, you know how much I love talking to you both. I could sit here all day going over some of our previews, but I think that brings us to the end of today's Record Celtic podcast. Should say, for everyone listening, you can find us at Record Sport on Facebook and Twitter, as well as Instagram. Swanee, Chris, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks, all the best.
Thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back next week. Cheers.